Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I find that everything has its moment. It's like I find that there's a moment for painting and a moment for drawing, even a moment for thinking and reading and listening and looking. And at the moment, I'm back into that drawing moment and can't wait to start looking at art as well. I'm going to London this weekend. But I'd say that like that I draw, it's almost like, it's like a little, I think Chantal Yoffa said it, and I heard her recently speak in a podcast. And she described the end of her paintbrush being like an antennae for thought. And it's like extracting the thoughts out and getting them onto a piece of paper. And I do it in a really mad rush. Like last night, I sat and made, 10, 20 drawings, just sort of finding the characters inside me and pulling them out.
It's my pleasure to welcome Anna Ilsley to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Over the past 10 years or so, Anna Ilsley's paintings and drawings have been spaces in which she contemplates intimacy and sensuality in the face of archaic ideals of feminine chastity, sin, and sexiness that still haunt contemporary culture. More recently, her paintings celebrate motherhood and mothering. She draws on her personal experience of caregiving whilst responding to the inherent expectations and responsibilities drawn up from the murky depths of our mother and child image world. Anna is based in Suffolk and graduated from Royal Drawing School in 2010 and the University of Brighton's BA in Fine Art Painting in 2006. Recent exhibitions include Underbelly at Parsons X Payne, Crab Bisque at St. Chad Projects London, Lover's Lane at Oceans Apart Manchester, and So Happy Together at Gallery Tom Christofferson in Copenhagen. She has taken part in many artists in residence programs, most recently at the Newnham College, University of Cambridge, for which she received an Arts Council Research and Development Award. Anna, we've been trying to get this interview on the books for a long time. I'm so glad the day has finally come. Thank you so much for being on the Artist Mother Podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you. And thanks for your patience. I was trying to figure out this meeting.
Well, I was going back through our emails and I'm like, I had to reschedule. You had to reschedule. It's just been a bit of a challenge, but that's okay. You know, we're an ocean apart. There's lots of moving parts in our lives. So here we are finally. I'm so happy to do this. I love your work. And there's, you know, just so much that I want to chat about, including the ways that your practice has changed and, you know, where you draw inspiration and all sorts of things. But I like to have you start by going back to your childhood and, you know, kind of just always wonder if being an artist was something that you thought maybe could be an avenue for you in the future when you were a kid, or like, what was your intersection? What was your introduction to art? And, you know, kind of how did you decide to become an artist?
Well, I did not come from a creative background, as in my dad worked with cars, my mum worked alongside him. So I was sort of a machinist sort of, machinist kind of background, but we were always really, really encouraged to draw. There was like a massive stack of like paper like tumbling down where you tug it, a piece of paper next to the fridge, and everything would fall on top of you, and that was like where we go to get the stuff to draw. So I think we drew every day. My mum really encouraged us to do that, and we'd holiday a lot in the UK, which featured caravans and rain a lot of the time. And so drawing was like the go-to thing to do. It wouldn't be telly so much, it'd be sitting down and drawing. So I think that kind of like creative imagined world and space and characters could like brought out and defined and created, happened through the encouragement of my mum. And my brother was very talented, and he was the artist really. And he'd go to extra art lessons. That wasn't me, that was him. So that's quite interesting. So I was admired him doing that. He was my older brother. But I'd say at school, yeah, I was encouraged there as well. But I remember having to convince my teacher to let me do art for GCSE, which is like, I don't know, what you do sort of age 14, 15. It's like, well, are you really gonna do this? Are you gonna work? I don't think I was like filled with, I wasn't like this like child prodigy or talent or anything. I think I just loved doing it. Yeah.
I love that image of the like stack of paper kind of overtaking your kitchen. And I think that concept of the imagined world, like being something your parents like exposed you to, is like, for me, it wasn't drawing. It was like nature. I wasn't allowed to watch TV all the time either. I had to go play outside kind of. And so, you know, I think that has been a big part of my creativity and my exposure to, I don't know, just like critical thinking and exploration and all of that. It all relates. Is your brother still an artist? Like, did he go on to be an artist? So did your parents raise two artists?
No, he's a musician. So he found love in music really. Mm-hmm. A bit later on.
Amazing.
He wasn't sure what to do for a little while, and then now he's a musician. Yeah.
So you went to the Royal Drawing School. Is that like a college program? So you went to college for art?
Yeah. So I went to the University of Brighton. So in the UK, I did a foundation, mm-hmm. which is a year-long course full of experimentation. Fantastic. And then went to University of Brighton and did a BA specifically in painting. And then a few years, I took a break, not a break from art, I was still a practicing artist, but then I went on to do a postgrad at the Royal Drawing School, which is a fully funded scholarship year where you're based in East London, and you just spend a year observationally drawing in these really intense, three incredibly intense terms. I think going back to what you said, I think that I became really good friends with drawing through my childhood experience with doing it, and became very good friends with it. And so, taking it on at the Royal Drawing School was a really natural step. But previous to that, I'd been on a trip to Bangladesh overland, from London to Bangladesh overland. We had to fly over Pakistan because it was a bit too dangerous for us to travel across there by train. But I'd done that when I hadn't got into the Royal College. I was like, if I don't get into the Royal College, which is like the most prestigious master's in the country, then I'm going to go on this trip and draw. And it was when I got back from that I went and did the drawing year, which was an amazing experience.
Amazing. Well, tell me more about that trip. Like, did you kind of like did a little travel artist residency, it sounds like?
Yeah. So I worked for 6 months and raised the cash. God knows how I did that at the time, but it did. And then we left from St. Pancras and went overland via, we crossed into Germany. We went to Romania, Bulgaria, and then into Turkey. And then we stayed in Istanbul for a little while. So I had this fascination with kind of metamorphosis. And I still do. It's just transferred from landscape into people or women. And looking at, I was thinking, how does the land evolve from the UK into the floodplains of Bangladesh? And I wanted to sort of trace that journey through drawing. And so that's what we did. And there was an amazing part after Turkey. So we stayed in Istanbul for a little while, and then we took a 3-day train across Turkey and into Iran. And we only got a 10-day visa, I think, in Iran, but we had an incredible time there. And then flew over to Nepal and then went around the back of north of India and then down into Bangladesh. Yeah, where we went, we specifically wanted to see the chars of the Brahmaputra River, which are sort of islands that kind of rise up and disappear with floods. It's a fascinating, beyond imagination landscape. That I was really interested in seeing.
Amazing. Well, tell me, you know, you mentioned that you really developed a friendship and a relationship with drawing, the practice of drawing. I'm curious how that, like thinking about your work now, the most recent work that I've seen, maybe you could describe your work for those listening and talk about how, you know, because now I would call you a painter, right? Capital P painter. So, which of course drawing is very much a part of painting, but I'm just curious how that relationship has shifted and how you see your relationship to drawing now as it relates to the work that you make.
Thanks. That's a nice question. Yeah, I think I draw a lot with a brush now. I find that my most fluid way of thinking. So at the moment, I've spent the last year like madly making and painting for my solo show, which opened in December last year. And right now I'm back into that zone of drawing. I don't know about you, but I find that everything has its moment. It's like I find that there's a moment for painting and a moment for drawing, even a moment for thinking and reading and listening and looking. And at the moment, I'm back into that drawing moment and can't wait to start looking at art as well. I'm going to London this weekend. But I'd say that like that I draw, it's almost like it's like a little, I think Chantal Jaffa said it. I heard her recently speak in a podcast, and she described the end of her paintbrush being like an antennae for thought. And it's like extracting the thoughts out and getting them onto a piece of paper. And I do it in a really mad rush. Like last night, I sat and made, I don't know, 10, 20 drawings, just sort of finding the characters inside me and pulling them out. So it's like articulating, trying to find the figures that can articulate particular or not particular subconscious thoughts. And then that does translate into my paintings. And the two cross over and inspire one another and inspire the way that I might start the painting. But my paintings will then use a kind of drawing or, I don't know, a shape, just as a starting off point, just as a jumping off point. And then who knows what can happen. They twist and turn and sort of decide, form themselves.
I love that.
Automatic process and really work really, really intuitively.
I love that idea of the paintbrush being the antenna. It reminds me of that scene in Harry Potter where Dumbledore takes the memory out of his brain with the tip of his wand and he drops it into that cistern, like the pool, like the memory keeping pool.
Yeah.
You know? I like that idea of like a memory or a thought like moving from your head to like a different location.
Massively. And also I think that, you know, once there is a form to that thought, you know when you've hit something truthful and something honest.
Yes.
Because some of those drawings, like I use, like I'm very productive. Like productivity is like my friend.
Okay.
And I'd say, like, I don't know, 10-15% of what I make actually gets the cut. And a lot of it gets over or worked over, especially drawings, especially working, in this kind of automatic way. I find that, something, I'm like, oh, there's something in that one only. And you know, there's 10 on the floor.
Yes. Well, tell me more about your practice. Like what, I also love that image of you, like even last night, you know, just furiously, like kind of having this moment of like getting all this, like this idea erupting from inside of you and you kind of having to get it out. What does your practice look like you know, you said you spend a lot of time drawing, and then you're obviously making like decent size, medium to large paintings, from what I've seen as the majority of your practice. You know, kind of like in and out of the studio, what does that look like? Is drawing something you do at home, and then when you get in the studio, you're working on your paintings? Or how do you kind of see the different components of your practice?
I mean, the drawing obviously is just like the world's most convenient art form, alongside knitting, because it's like sewing, stitching, because it's so contained, and especially within sketchbooks. Like for example, last night when my daughter, who's four, was watching Swashbuckle, which is a sort of game, like pirate game show.
Okay.
And so I was, and while she was watching that, sitting next to her, half watching it, you know.
Yep.
I love how, those moments are slightly tedious, where, you know, your kid's locked in, but they want you with them. Like, they're fantastic moments to, like, open up this thing.
Yes.
And start pulling out the strings. Drawing, definitely comes with me. And it's like my friend on the train, not that I'm on the train very much. That, and also, like, I find that when I'm driving, I don't know about you, when I'm driving, I get so many ideas.
Yes.
That I started voice
running, notes. Driving in the shower.
Yeah, anywhere where you don't have access to paper, can't safely write.
Right.
So, like, that comes in a lot as well. I might get a composition, an idea for a composition, or just a starting point. And they're often a bodies at the moment, their bodies bent backwards or kicking off against the frame. Like, I'm really interested in the restraint of that, of this, you know, the restraint of the rectangle, and really using the edges of that framework to talk about restriction, for example. Also, like, that's a playful space for me. I don't do much sort of it's kind of the figure within that space is there's a kind of like a back chatty kind of often a back chatty kind of like look or grin or grimace or a sort of bulge. My figures kind of bulge out, and so there's a lot of, I like dealing with restriction. But I think I've gone off your question.
No, that I love hearing you talk. So I guess bringing you back, and where does the drawing practice intersect with the painting practice? Like, how do you bring the drawing practice that you maybe are doing outside of the studio into the studio? And maybe you could talk about your painting practice a bit.
Totally. Yeah. So I think that the drawings that happen outside of the studio are a way of me like staying in touch with different characters, or like pulling or forming different characters. And then I might reuse them. So only like maybe 2 years ago, I started making these paintings on paper using monochrome. At the time, I was using pink and red. So these would be on paper. I'd start by making just random shapes with a kind of washed out color tone. And then I'd allow them to dry. And then I'd come back and just see what I found within those shapes. So I guess it's like quite a sort of surrealist mode of working, you know, like quite subconscious. And I'd find all these characters, and it was a really exciting thing.
Like looking at clouds.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, there's the bunny, there's the guy with the big nose, there's the,
Yeah, totally. And I think that the drawings I make just with line and sketchbooks and stuff, they do come into these other works on paper that I make with ink. And then that process of working with abstract shapes to see what I find is morphed into my paintings. So there's a kind of like, there's a connect between all of those processes, and they feed one another and sort of inform one another and work together. And yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, but I think that it's only really in the last year and a half that I've, or 2 years, that I've been working on a large scale, because when I first had Gwen, I was working on board, on flat board, like no more really than like 40 by 50 centimeters. So much smaller, denser, completely different way of, completely different process and way of working. So it's, I do like chopping and changing.
I love these. I have the pink paintings pulled up. I just love these. I love that you, now that you've shared the process, that like I can see the one titled Legging It, which is like the kind of like more like a pile of like figures. Mm-hmm. Like I'm like, oh, like it's just so interesting that you kind of just laid the paint down and then went back later to pull the figures out. I really like thinking about that. It's so, so cool. It makes me appreciate the piece even more. Let's meet up in New York City next spring for an artist caregiver exhibition. I'm thrilled to share that Artist Mother Podcast is partnering with Visionary Art Collective, and we will be bringing an exhibition by artist caregivers to Warren's Contemporary Gallery in New York City. The title of the show will be called Those Who Tend. Let me read you the statement. These days, we have so much to tend to, countless demands that deserve our attention. Our art practice needs nurturing, our children need feeding, our gardens need weeding, and our inboxes need clearing. We are pulled in so many directions, tending to various aspects of life. Yet the most important tending we often overlook is towards ourselves. This call is a reflection for, quote, those who tend, an invitation to submit work created amidst the challenges of balancing a life full of responsibilities. Artist parents who are juggling their art practice, careers, domestic tasks, caregiving, and carving out time for self-care are invited to submit their work. So if you're listening to this podcast, that's probably you. I would love to see your submission and possibly see your work if selected next spring, 2025, in April at Warren's Contemporary in Brooklyn. This show will run for 6 to 8 weeks, and the exhibition will be promoted through social media on the Visionary Art Collective platform. All pieces will be featured on the Artist Mother Podcast platform. Warren's Contemporary will be sharing your work, and additionally, I will be selecting a handful of artists who will be chosen for an exclusive interview on this podcast, the Artist Mother Podcast, and select artists will also be featured in New Visionary Magazine. So there's lots of opportunities for promotion within this exhibition. This opportunity is open to artists who identify as parents and caregivers based in the United States. We welcome artists of all career levels to apply, and we accept all 2D and 3D mediums, including painting, drawing, photography, digital, prints, fiber art, collage, mixed media, sculpture, ceramics, and installation art. Unfortunately, we are not accepting film or video at this time due to the gallery's limitations. I'm thrilled to share this exhibition in partnership with Victoria at Visionary Art Collective. You can head to artistmotherpodcast.com/exhibitions to learn more, hit our exhibitions tab on our homepage, or go to the Visionary Art Collective page and find the submission form there. We would love to see your work and to maybe meet up in New York City. That would be so amazing. So make sure you apply by our deadline, Sunday, December 1st, 2024 at midnight. Hope to see your work, hope to see your submission, and hope to see you in New York City in April 2025. So you have two kids.
One.
Yeah. One kid. Yeah. So your daughter is 4. Okay. And so you kind of had some time to develop your practice and your work before becoming a parent. What was that transition like for you? How is your practice, you know, what were you like making and thinking about and even doing before having Gwen? Yeah. And then kind of 4 years in, what's been the transition for you?
Oh, God. I think, yeah, there's been loads of different transitions within those 4 years. But I mean, immediately after having her, I mean, after 3 months of having Gwen, the country was in lockdown.
Oh yeah, you had
So
a COVID baby.
we had a COVID baby. My partner is an intensive care nurse, so we had
Oh.
that like extra pressure of don't
Yeah.
get
Yeah.
COVID.
Ooh, I bet that was intense.
That was really intense. But yeah, I desperately missed it. I think the first thing I did after having Gwen was paint some little monsters on our downstairs bathroom wall while she was asleep for about 45 minutes. And I've carried on in that way. To be honest, I found having Gwen, and like, I think every artist, I don't know if you did similar in your education, but at foundation, and even I did a GMVQ before that. Like, I started specializing in art from being about 15, 16. And they used to get us to draw with our, all this classic stuff, draw with your left hand, draw on a long, different ways of restricting yourself. Use these really gross colors, restrict yourself, and make something out of it. And I like found that having Gwen was like my ultimate restriction. Like,
Yes.
right, give
Brought
me
you
this.
right back to art school.
Yeah.
You're like, this should be part of this exercise. They should strap a baby to you and, or even like one of those baby think it over like that's brilliant. I'm like every foundations program, who cares about the long pole? Let's get something realistic here, people.
Totally. But yeah, I think that when you have 10 minutes, you use those 10 minutes. And every parent knows that like procrastination becomes a thing of the past. And like, yeah, my studio practice, I'd go through different phases. I would procrastinate a lot. And like procrastination, I am a fan. I wouldn't cuss it. I am a fan of procrastination. It has its role. But yeah, I mean, I'd come to the studio when Gwen was a bit older. She started coming with me when she was about 6 months old, when she was old enough to sort of sit and be okay sitting for a minute. And even if I dipped my brush in some paint and made one line, it was like, I feel better. And I think that is like a mental health thing for me. It's like, I paint because I have to, and it does keep me well. And I really noticed stopping because I had to stop for a while. So yeah, I think there's that. But I think, yeah, Gwen, all of the driving to and fro from nursery, those early hours where you literally have an hour at your desk, I found it really inspiring. I found it interesting. I found that it made me find new things. I really enjoyed how I had a limited time period and paintings would be built over a far longer time period. And I'd notice different things and I might stop a bit earlier on something, And at that time, I was working flat with thin washes of paint so that information would like rise to the surface. And I might see a sort of hip and a toe, and then I'd work with that and see where it goes. So I think that working with like decrete with these sort of little slices of time was really, really exciting and gave birth to a whole new way of working and a whole new way of thinking. And it goes really against, there's another artist called Jessica Jane Charleston, and I've worked with her. Our children are about the same age. We're both represented by the same gallery in Spain, and we've worked together a bit with our kids. But we met when we were in London at Bow Road Studios in East London, and we used to talk about our fear of having kids. Just like for us, it was like it would be game over, and that was just the dialogue at the time. And even maybe it even wasn't the dialogue at the time, but it was still the dialogue that existed. And I do think that artists, parents, that there is, this is a kind of movement at the moment where we're like, oh, yes, it's hard. And yes, everyone's story is different, of course. But yeah, I found it exactly the absolute opposite of what I expected. Yeah.
I love that you, and I'm sure it's taken work to frame it that way. I don't think you have arrived to this like this contentment level with it without like a lot of processing. But I really appreciate your perspective of, you know, seeing what can be gained, you know, instead of what is lost, I guess. I'm curious about, were you working full time as an artist before you had Gwen, or like, did you have another job, or like how, just tangibly for your family and like how you structure your life and finances and all that, what has that transition been like?
Yeah, I mean, that's been really hard because we're quite a low income family, with Tom being an NHS nurse. Mm-hmm. Before having Gwen, I was teaching. I was a visiting lecturer at University of Brighton. I was also teaching at the Royal Drawing School, so both places I studied. As well as that, I was working as a sort of administrator one day a week for a poetry festival, and doing extra bits of teaching locally. So like my work's very like hit and miss. Like I might have a really good month and I bank it and live off that for a bit. But yeah, I had to completely stop teaching when I had Gwen. So there was no way that with Tom doing shift work, that there was no way I could reliably show up on it every Tuesday evening to do a life class online or even online. So I had to stop that, and I have started teaching a bit more locally, but it's very sporadic. I can't rely on it. So now at the moment, like I was doing it this morning, I was gardening. So I've always picked up gardening, and I did that pre-Gwen as well. And so I've started picking that up more and more in the last year. And at the moment I've got three gardens I look after. And actually it's a good combination with being in the
like
studio.
Like you take care of other people's lawns?
No, like their flower beds. I don't do lawns that
and
much.
You get paid for it.
Green roses, stuff like that.
I love that. Like that. Does that like affect your creative practice too?
I think it just helps me to be in my body, because my time in my head is really unhealthy.
Yes.
And it's really good to be outside. I love being outside, and I can also, it's flexible. I can say, I can do this, I can't do that, and I'll swap you around to that day. It doesn't matter that much. It's the garden, isn't it? It's not like, it works for me, and it pays more than most stuff you can pick up and put down. So
yeah. Oh, I love that so much. That's like such an inspiring, I think as artists, like we kind of, artists who have the privilege of not 100% needing a 9-to-5 or like a salaried position, you know, we're always like, what would be a good like little add-on that I could, you know, what's a little job I could do that's like, you know, gonna give me decent money but is low commitment? And I've never heard anybody say that they do gardening or like you know, kind of yard work. I love that idea. I think that's great. Anna, let's talk a bit more about your work. You know, have these beautiful paintings that are primarily depicting female figures. And so I just wanted you to talk a bit more about like some of the ideas that you're exploring within the work, some of the content. You know, I know your work has shifted, maybe not shifted, but it in the past it has talked a bit more about like sexuality and you know, the feminine identity, and you've expanded maybe to include conversations about the maternal figure and motherhood. Just like want to hear you talk about what are some of the ideas that you're thinking through as you're painting these figures, like what is the inspiration, what are you communicating with the work?
I guess as I paint, I draw on my own kind of personal biography, and of course that includes motherhood, especially right now, and my experience as a woman in midlife, as well as those, you know, as a waitress growing up, and anything can creep in. I'm very open, and I love that. I love to relinquish control and edit, paint,
draw, edit. I love that process until, yeah, something honest and surprising happens. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have ground rules. So like the central figure can't be passive, will often hold the gaze, mm-hmm. Holds control over their own body, is often scheming, and is ultimately not in a tidy state of like airbrushed availability. I like a lumpy body, a painterly body, a layered body, a beak nose, you know, banana breasts. And I love all that multiplicity creeping in. And yeah, I guess following on from that, I guess at the risk of sounding slightly pompous, that process is pretty mythical. You know, there is something deeply exciting about the very nature of myths themselves and how they kind of just luxuriate in their own ambiguity. And yeah, that's a wonderful like headspace to be in. And I suppose that is the magic and the addiction of paint and image making. But yeah, you asked about some of the earlier work, and I think Love Island's, in the UK we've had Love Island since, I don't know, 2013, 2012, 2014. And yeah, going back to that squeezing into a role and failing gloriously, I really like to use clothing to deal with restriction. So one example is those cutout swimsuits that they often have on that show. And I think they were sponsored by Boohoo. And I use one of the swimsuits to clothe this Sienese-inspired mother figure in my painting Big Mother. So yeah, I actually reference and screenshot from that show quite a lot and have done for years. And it stems from this situation that inspired a lot of my kind of Lingus paintings earlier in my career. So yeah, just briefly to explain, there was this media frenzy around Zara Holland, and she was a contestant on the show, and she was Miss Great Britain at the time, and she had sex on the show and as a result was stripped of her title. And the forces that be at the beauty pageant said that this was because they promote strong, positive female role models. And it just neatly summed up so much about how one can be sexy and women can be alluring, but they can't follow through and seize back their sexuality and have sex. So it's this double bind, and it comes back to restriction, or it feeds into that same conversation. You know, this wasn't even 10 years ago, but you know, a lot has changed. But yeah, restriction is a big one. And I respond to that barrage of pressure that women face and are subliminally kind of restricted by, and hold that frustration in my mind as I work. I'm sort of responding to it as I work. You know, the way that women's bodies have been and still are bound and buckled and surveyed and judged and watched. And I guess that explains some of the reasoning behind referencing classical artworks such as Titian's Actaeon and Diana. I love Aphrodite, she's great. Lely's Crouching Aphrodite in the British Museum is another really good one. So vulnerable, and she's just trying to get a glass of water, her bum's in view, and she's just surveyed daily. And yeah, these kinds of things become starting points, and they can so easily, just with line, so simply be twisted and played with to switch that power play, you know, like, hey, move away from my ass. And I guess, yeah, playing with that history of the male gaze and seizing back a bit of control is pretty exciting.
So I think those, and but I'm not really having those ideas as I work. It's more that, yes, I read about that. Yes, I'm interested in that. Yes, I'm like questioning it and critiquing it. But I'm not really thinking about it as I work. The work happens.
That's kind of what is coming out, and you make those connections after. Maybe.
Yeah. But then I guess like that's where the starting points come in, because yeah, I used to use, you know, like classic, like again, like Boohoo advert or something like that, Nasty Girl,
the billboards that you'd see of like very sexualized images of yes. women, like very, very available. But then if you just twist them a little bit, they become really fun and questioning. Yeah. So I was using them quite a lot just as a starting point. And then similarly was also and do still use like characters from Renaissance paintings, like you know, Titian, Diana, or something like that. Someone or an Aphrodite would be perfect, like, you know, Lely's Aphrodite crouching over.
Yes.
Oh my God, did you see my bum? You know, but like twisting that and being like, yeah, did you see my bum? Hello, I can see you looking at me. What do you think you're doing? You know,
I love that. I see that more in the most recent work too, like definitely that kind of iconic, like classical reference feels a bit more direct, which is really, really powerful. Going back to that idea of restrictions, like I guess I'm curious for you if there's ways in which that concept has been personal. Like, is that something that you've channeled into your work because of like specific experiences you have had? And of course I'm gonna guess the answer because you're a woman and like I know, but I guess just like wanting you to share what are some ways that has like why that, you know, and what has been the personal impetus for you?
Well, I think like the pressure to be really gorgeous, one of them, right? To be really looking and be the right size and scale for who, for what. And I think, yeah, my mum always really wanted me to have nice brushed hair and sort of like tidy. She used to try like me nice and tidy and well presented, and definitely rebelled against that. But yeah, you know, so as a waitress, men would just pinch your bum and you tell your boss and he's like, oh, get over it. You know, you see so much stuff as a young woman and, yeah, so much explicit men revealing themselves to you. Just the way that you'll come on to, I don't know, all of that stuff I found haunting and terrifying as a even in my 20s, even into my 30s. But also I think it goes beyond that, because like my mum, like I grew up in a really traditional family in a way. Like my mum went to housekeeping college, which is
what?
I know, which is not about learning to be a housekeeper, although she did do that for a while. It was about learning to be a housewife. And so she
is that kind of like finishing school or like?
Yeah, but why is it called that? What is that about? Why is it called that? They're showing you the exercise books. They're like showing you how to decorate a room, how to get the crap out of the U-bend of the sink, how to clean your shoes, what to do, how to tidy up, how to clean the
oven. How to go from daytime to nighttime with the perfect change in your outfit. I mean, that's something you can read. Like I'm just like making these connections to, it's like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. How to present yourself when your husband gets home from work.
Yeah. And what kind of drink, 5 cocktails to have waiting that you can make in a pinch.
Exactly. What else can you do to like pivot around a man? Yeah, I watched my mum behave like that. She is and was always the matriarch, so she didn't really work. But these were elements of my upbringing that did come through, and they were like it's those expectations passed down that you don't start really picking them apart until you're. So maybe a mum yourself, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I think, oh, there's so much there, but I find myself in this space of really starting to like process how I was raised and what are some of the, and you know, I have wonderful parents and like a good relationship with them, but they're not perfect, you know, and there's just like things that as a parent now, like I see in my own behavior that I'm like, oh, that was a learned behavior. And here's like how I can trace that back. And yeah, you know, like I think art is definitely a way to like process some of that if you want to bring it into your work, you know. I think that's partly why I've chosen to work with textiles, because for me, there's like this inherent, you know, sort of legacy that you can see within like the use of a piece of fabric, you know? And so part of just conceptually, part of what I want my work to talk about is that trajectory of behavior that is carried throughout generations, like labor that is like shared amongst like generations of people. So all of that is like really interesting to me. And I love
it's
that
like a lineage of communication, isn't it? And it's also everyone knows fabric in a way that not everyone knows paint. Like,
right.
Everyone knows fabric.
Yeah. Listen up, I've got another open call opportunity to share for you. This one is a big one. It features a solo show and residency opportunity for the selective artist. Let's learn about it. Kinhouse Arc seeks to support emerging artists with this meaningful opportunity to have a solo exhibition. Filling a gallery full of work you made is such an impactful step in an artist's career. One selected artist will receive a supported solo show experience from beginning to end. This includes mentorship and support leading up to the exhibition, a week-long stay at Kinhouse Artist Residency in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the week of the exhibition opening, installation support at the exhibition, a one-month exhibition run at our gallery space in Fort Wayne, Indiana, promotion and marketing of your artwork, and an opening reception on Friday, February 7th, 2025. For this show, we're asking artists to submit a proposal for a monumental solo experience. Whether you're an artist who has not yet had your first solo show, or you're someone who maybe has had a solo, but you're looking to facilitate a new project or a new body of work, we'd really love to see your ideas. We recognize that art careers are full of milestone events, and working towards your first or an early career solo show is a big deal. So whether you're selected to show with us for this show or not, we certainly hope that this idea, putting this call out there, empowers you to put together a strong proposal and find an exhibition place to show your work in 2025. For this show, Monumental, we are welcoming submissions from persons of all genders and backgrounds. Even though you're listening to the Artist Mother podcast, you do not have to be or identify as a mother to apply. Work may be submitted in a proposed form or not yet finished. You can share your ideas with us and the work that you want to make for the show. The residency dates for this opportunity are firm. They're Monday, February 3rd through Sunday, February 9th, 2025. And that is because the exhibition opening will take place for your exhibition, for your solo show, on Friday evening, February 7th. So you get a residency week with this open call, with this solo show opportunity for the week that your show opens. Because we want you to get to come and be here and have that supported opportunity. So to submit, you can head to kinhouseart.com/monumental or go to kinhouseart.com and just click our open calls and you'll be taken right to the Monumental tab. We would love to see your work, and please note that the submission form is only open through October 30th, 2024 at midnight in Eastern Standard Time. So get your proposals and your submissions in so we can start making some decisions. We can't wait to see what your ideas are and possibly host you and meet you in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Once again, this is an opportunity called Monumental for an artist to receive a solo show at Kinhouse Art Gallery in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and you will also receive a week-long artist residency the week of your opening. Head to kinhouseart.com/monumental to apply, and we hope to see your submission before the deadline, October 30th, 2024. So much there. I have just a couple more questions before we wrap up. Just curious, like, what are some things that you're kind of working on now? You know, your daughter is 4. So I think of 4 as like kind of a gateway into, you know, the really like tidy, crazy, or untidy, crazy years are not over, but you've moved beyond baby stage, and like there's more independence and autonomy, you know, diapers and like car seats and all that. So like, what are some things that you're kind of hoping for yourself, for your art career in the next like phase, and maybe some steps that you're taking right now to build towards the kind of dreams that you have for yourself as an artist in the near future?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's often there's a kind of come down, isn't there, after doing a big show?
Yes. Yeah, I know. So, you just had a big solo show the end of last year, right?
Yeah, so that was a really intense year of making. It was also, as you know, was a year where my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And my dad had before Christmas, he's had dementia for 5 years, but before Christmas he got it in a completely new, devastating way. And we lost him about a month and a bit ago. He broke his neck of femur, which is very common. And he was 88, so he lived a good life. But he died. So I think there's a lot that's been happening.
A lot. Stop.
Yeah, and so I think that that's why I'm going back to the drawing and doing that when I want, when I can. And also, like, I'm just have a massive, massive appetite for ancient or medieval art. And we actually booked our flights last night to go to Italy. We haven't been abroad but Tom hasn't. We haven't been away as a family for 2 years. So we're going to go to Venice. We're going to go to Padua and see the frescoes there. We're going to go to Ferrara, see the frescoes there. And we're going to go on to Bologna. I see the art, and I'm just really excited about supping it up, supping up culture. I live in rural Suffolk, and there's the nearest museum is over an hour away. And my in and out kind of life, Tom's shift work, Gwen pickups, nurseries, da da da. Yeah, I don't see much art at the moment, so I can't wait, and that will involve a lot of drawing. Hopefully Gwen will fall asleep in the buggy. I'm just like, okay, you're gonna have really long naps.
Yes.
Okay? And then up and eat really amazing pasta, and you're gonna like it.
Yes. And you're gonna see mommy really happy because she's looking at great art.
I'm afraid we won't be going to very many playgrounds.
But we'll eat lots of gelato.
Exactly. We were like, God, can we do this with her? And it was like, yeah, she's quite easygoing. So yeah, we'll see. I'll report back. But yeah, so that's next. That's in May. And I'm just like getting my appetite back again for starting to think about my next paintings. Mm. And, you know, as distressing as, and terrible it has been to watch my dad die very recently, there's been elements of it that I know will come into my work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, death, rebirth, that sort of thing. Also just dementia. Dementia being extremely cruel, being extremely restriction, being actually linked in with a lot of what I think about when I'm painting, and seeing if that will find its way into my work. I expect it probably will. And also just the excitement of like not like I have a couple of shows, group shows, further on, later on in the year. But it's very exciting when you get to paint without thinking about who's going to see it next. Like, I always am excited by the idea of making the most difficult work I've made yet, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to making difficult work. Mm. yeah.
What a nice perspective to have that, you know, that care for yourself, to provide yourself that space to process and heal, and but also like to understand that it will affect your art in conceptual and tangible ways, and to be like holding space for that too, like I think is really lovely. In the beginning of our conversation, you talked about the word you used, I think, were moments, how there are moments for drawing, moments for painting, moments for, and I think one thing that I took from that I was hearing you say was like a word that I use is seasons, right? There are seasons for collage. There are seasons for not making any art at all. There's seasons for reading and thinking. And you've reflected some changes in the seasons for your life and your practice. And, I think one of the things that I'm trying to work on for myself is just being in the season that I'm in, you know, and not looking towards future seasons all the time, but just acknowledging like where I'm at, you know, right now.
Totally, because I think you miss it when it's gone, and like you might as well get really stuck into whatever thing you're in. Mm-hmm. And you might have a favorite thing.
Yeah.
And I probably do have a favorite thing. But yeah, acknowledging that, yeah, totally. There's our culture now is just not really so set up for that, is it? There is an amazing podcast series called Witch, and it's on the BBC, but it's also I think on Spotify. So
okay.
But it's really brought that to life, that seasonality, and how, you know, obscured from nature our lives have become culturally, and how that doesn't fit, it doesn't sit right. It was just a very refreshing kind of look at actually how we spent the majority of our time as humans on the planet has been way more linked with the seasons than the Enlightenment 200 years ago, something like that. So I think it's really that's an important, it's a really important thing to acknowledge, and be with.
Anna, what are some ways that you create space for yourself or care for yourself outside of like being an artist and a parent? Is there anything that like, I don't know, do you like cooking? Do you like what are some things that you do that help you connect just with you?
Well, I mean, I would say that really is making art, but now it's gardening. Back to the grief thing. I don't feel right until I've been digging for an hour. So my garden's like being totally like rejuvenated at the moment. Be late to ground elder. I haven't wanted you for ages, but there was no way that I was going to like tackle you. And now I'm like, yeah, I've got it right. I'm here for you. You're getting out. Yeah, so that's been a really good way to connect. But also just seeing my friends. I don't know about you. I hope all my best pals live about 4 hours away. Some still in London, but seeing my friends is really important. I don't do it enough, and I will do better at that. Yeah. It's quite an insular life, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be for sure. Oh, this has been an amazing conversation. I'm excited to share it with listeners and share your work. I always close with 5 final questions to wrap up the podcast and help folks get to know you a little bit better. So I want to dive into those. Who is your biggest art crush?
My shoes a genre?
Sure.
Okay, so right now, yokai, which is like the Japanese monsters. And I was given a book
Amazing book, and I'm leaning on it right now. But yeah, just phenomenal, phenomenal characters, wilder than your wildest dreams, more inspiring and connected with like everyday items, like a yokai. I think a monster is a very bad translation into English for like everything. Everything has a personification. So like a table has a yokai in Japanese culture. So yeah, I can barely look at the book, but it's full of like haggy kind of monstery, like wormy, nasty, wonderful robot-y sorts of things. So yokai is my, is floating my boat at the moment.
What's the name of the book?
Yokai. Yokai, but it's published. I can't even tell you, but it's big and it's blue and it's got a picture of a weird elephant on the front. So
amazing.
Google your kind. Yes.
Okay. What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on? I don't know if you just described your dream trip, but maybe there's another one you want to share.
Yeah, no, that's been in the back for a while. That is the dream trip.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you're doing that and going to Italy. Tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name right. The film, Yorgos Lanthimos, the Greek director who just did Poor Things, who before that did The Lobster, before that did Dogtooth. I absolutely love his films. They take me somewhere that nowhere else has taken me. Yeah, somewhere extremely uncomfortable, but also confronting some important questions. I don't know how he does it. Yeah, with ultimate surrealism. Yeah, I adore his work. Yeah.
Poor Things is the film Emma Stone just won an Oscar for, right? Okay, I have that on my list to see.
Hard view, right? Yeah.
What's your favorite meal?
Oh, it changes so much. I think I'm a bit of a food tart. I do really like pancakes and have done forever. Lemon and sugar crepes, me and Gwen make them and she really likes them as well. And me and, at Lent, I used to always eat them with my best pal, Katie. And I think one day we clocked up about 28 by foregoing every other type of food source.
Amazing.
She's probably exceeded it now. She's way better at it than me now. But yeah.
I love that. Oh, that's a good answer. Okay, Anna, and I always like to close by giving you the chance to give a shout out to someone who supports you in your work.
I think it would be my studio. My studio is run as a co-op. It was set up by a group of artists. It's a labor of love. It's incredibly welcoming. It has a free gallery space that doesn't take commission. It has loads of resources. I mean, yeah, it's a really unique place that is also affordable. And also they've made it amazing for Gwen. Like Gwen has a swing and pit and loads of books and toys. So this is her second home. Like what would I do? I think that's a massive part of what's made a significant, you know, I mean, it has been that this has been my experience of being an artist. Mum has been, all of it has been in this studio. And I don't think I could have done it in London. I think most of the people who were mums have had to let go of their studio space, at least for a little while, because the price is just so obstructive. So, the community here is really incredible. Yeah, special place. Yeah.
That sounds great. Is it close to your house?
Yeah, I can even cycle in.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like a it's great.
I did want to shout out Diana Gravina. She's a friend of mine, and we just had coffee last week when I was in London, and she runs Mother House Studios, which is in Lewisham. But, you know, just to your point of not being able to do it in London, I know what a hard program that is for them to make sustainable. And yeah, but it, I mean, they're doing it. It's a collective of artists who have studios, and there's like a playground and, you know, kind of a garden for kids and stuff. But yeah, it's really hard to find those spaces where you can kind of it's like a third space, almost like a like an experience of bringing together, you know, the multiple identities into this third space where you can be safe. And I'm so glad you have that where you live.
Yeah, and what trailblazers they are in Lewisham. I mean, yeah, absolute labor of love. And this will, it will hopefully give birth to more and more things like that, because I know Hetty Judah does a lot of interesting things, but recently noticed that there's an exhibition space opening where the kids can come, and it's opening an hour early, and breastfeeding is welcome. You know, this is happening more and more.
Yes.
To your part in the community. It's trailblazing. It's
yes, amazing. We got to keep the work going. All right, where can folks find you? Instagram, website, what are all the places that you're connecting?
Yeah, thanks, Kayla. It's my website is annailsley.com, and I am on Instagram. You can find me there, and everything I get up to goes via that. So
perfect.
Yeah.
And your Instagram handle is your name, Anna Ilsley.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this has been delightful. I'm so glad we finally got it. We did it. Let's hope the file saves and it all works. And oh, it's been lovely to talk to you, Anna. And you know, here's to a great trip for you coming up in Italy, and just a wonderful healing season as you process, you know, your dad passing and all the things.
Thank you for such amazing conversation and for inviting me to take part. And I've really enjoyed talking with you. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.